Now we come to the lecture of the 4th of June, 1908. Rudolf Steiner starts by reminding his audience. He says that in the last lectures, we have occupied ourselves primarily with the presence of all sorts of spiritual beings who, so to say, exist between the various sense-physical nature kingdoms which surround us. In particular, we have in our last lecture seen how there, where the beings of the different nature kingdoms touch each other, where the plants press themselves onto stone, as in, for example, where springs are, and places where stone presses itself against metal, as you find under the earth in many cases, where there is such a community, a communion between bees and the flower, how there, all over, forces develop themselves, which draw themselves in different, which forces develop, though different types of beings draw into earthly existence, beings which we have called elementary beings. And in connection with these elementary beings, the fact has occupied us, namely the cutting off of certain beings which we've called the Abschnurung, the cutting off of certain beings from their great connections. We have seen that such elementary beings, which one in spiritual science, for example, designate with the name of salamanders, those beings partly have their origin from the cut-off parts of animal group souls, which, so to say, have dared to go too far forward into the physical world, and then no longer have found their way back, in order, after the dissolving away of the body of the animals, to again unite itself with the group soul of the corresponding type of animal species. Since we know that in the regular course of our life, the beings of our earth, the beings of the animal kingdom, the beings of the plant kingdom, the beings of the mineral kingdom, they have, well, if I might call it so, their ego soul. They have in the main, these kingdoms have such an ego soul as humans have an ego soul. But these ego soul differ from human ego souls only through the fact that the ego souls of these other beings have their existence in other worlds. The ego soul of the human being in this particular evolutionary cycle has its beingness here on the physical plane, at least during the day-waking period. We further know that those beings whom we call the animals are in such a situation that, coarsely speaking, roughly speaking, similarly configured animals have a common group soul or group ego, and that these group egos exist in the so-called astral world. Furthermore, that those beings which we call the plants, they have only a dreamless sleeping conditions for here on the physical world. However, they have their group egos in the lower parts of the Devashanic world. And finally, stones, minerals, have their group souls in the upper parts of the Devashanic world. Now, that particular person who can move in a clairvoyant way in these worlds, in the astral worlds, and in the Devashanic worlds, that clairvoyant person can have intercourse, can have interreaction, as it were, with the animal souls who are their group souls. He can have interaction with the plant souls. He can have interaction with the mineral souls. Just as here, on the physical world, during day waking, he has interaction with human souls or human egos. Now, we must furthermore be clear about the fact that man still in the manifold way is a very complicated put-together being. He is a being of whom already we have already talked about to you the complications of the human nature and its constitution, its beingness. In various lectures we told you all about that. But it will appear to us to be, but man will appear to us to become more and more complicated the further we enter into the connection with the great cosmic facts. In order to make understandable for us that this human being is not quite a simple being, which the normal, naive way of looking at things regards the human being, to realize how he's not simple as they think he is, we need just only to hold before ourselves the fact that in the night, that from the time of going to sleep to waking up, man in the present evolutionary cycle is a quite different being from what he is during the day. In the bed there lie his physical body and his ether body. And lifted up out of this physical lifted out of it is the ego with the astral body. Now let's consider both of these components. In the first place, the physical body and the ether body. There they lie, and there they have, if we disregard for the moment the transition condition of the dream-filled sleep, there this ether body and physical body are there. They have what we could call a dreamless sleep consciousness without any content and without any perceptive ability. But also that which has gone out of the physical and ether body, the ego with the astral body, that has precisely likewise in the human being of the present evolutionary condition, he has the dreamless sleep consciousness as well. That particular consciousness, which here in the physical world the outspread plant kingdom has, that is also possessed by the sleeping man, as well in those parts which here remain in the physical world, as well as in those parts which during sleep are in the astral world. In both cases, as the same sleeping perception, sleeping consciousness without perception. Now, however, we must at least try to occupy ourselves with these two separated parts of the sleeping human being. We know indeed, out of other lectures, that this human being of the present time arose very gradually and slowly. We know that he, in a long distant past, in a long distant incarnation of our Earth, which we designate as the Saturn condition, that there in the Saturn condition, there was received the first Anlager, the first germinal seed of the physical body. We know that then on the second incarnation of our Earth, the Sun incarnation, he received, added to the physical body, he received the ether body or the life body. That on the third incarnation of the Earth, the Moon condition, to all that he added the astral body, and that upon the Earth, the present incarnation of our planet, he receives that which we call the Ish, the ego. So man has developed himself very slowly and gradually. This physical body, as man today carries, is this physical body is actually the oldest, and that part of the human body which has made the highest number of transformations. Man has transformed himself, this physical body has been transformed four times. The first germinal seed of the ancient Saturn which man received, and which since then has three times perfected itself, once upon the Sun, once upon the Moon, and finally upon the Earth. That expresses itself. The first germinal seed upon ancient Saturn, which has gone through these three transformations upon the Sun, Moon, and Earth, that expresses itself in the sense organs which man today possesses. they were quite different organs upon the ancient Saturn. But at that time, they were there present in their first germinal seed, their first Anlage. And the other human body was not yet present. As a single being with sense organs, that's how can we regard the ancient Saturn, quite covered over covered over with sense organs. On the Sun, there was added to that the ether body. The human physical body transforms itself, and there arose the organs upon the Sun, which today we can designate as the glandular organs. At that time, they are very imperfect, but they are present in their first germinal seed, their first Anlage. The sense organs continue to perfect themselves. Then there come upon the Moon, though there's added upon the Moon those organs which we have after, which we have those organs. On the Moon there come those organs, they're added those organs which we designate as the nerve organs, which today, which through the impregnation of the astral body of the physical, through the impregnation of the astral body, the physical body experience a third time transformation. Good blimey, Governor. Example of the two extremes. Here we have one sentence. Rudolf Steiner, in one sentence, he put in three or four different ideas he compressed together, which should have had three or four sentences. So you hear the Teutonic tendency. Either they take a simple concept and which could be given in one line and pad it out to a whole bleeding paragraph, or alternatively, they shove something into one line which should really have three or four sentences. That's just something which is, as I say, a Teutonic characteristic in presenting ideas. I repeat, a 19th century Teutonic idea that has no place in the 20th century. At least not when it's translated into English. And not even in German. Germans don't speak that way today. Even intelligent Germans don't do it. Okay, finished. I continue to go to shout this to the housetops until somebody wakes up and realizes we need a whole new type of English translations for the work of Rudolf Steiner. If the work of Rudolf Steiner is to continue to expand, so it meets really the English-speaking peoples, those people among whom I will understand in future, in America, Rudolf Steiner is going to incarnate upon. If we're going to prepare these English-speaking peoples in America, which, as I say, I understand Rudolf Steiner will incarnate America in 2002, I'm given to understand that, okay? Then we have to get these Rudolf Steiner work into proper, really understandable English, pure English, not Teutonic bloody double talk. Please note, I'm talking solely about the lecture work. What I've just said has no application whatsoever to the written work of Rudolf Steiner. That written work has to be placed as it is, has to be kept in the form that it is. That's the written work which was carefully constructed by Rudolf Steiner. But the printed lectures were not carefully constructed by Rudolf Steiner. They were thrown out to an audience, put down on notes and tapes, and then put together afterwards. You must be clear that these lectures are not sacrosanct stuff, that they have to be varied to suit the different idiom of the different countries. Period. Finish. Get back to the stuff, Rudolf Mansell. Go back to the sentence that caused this bleeding outburst. Then there arise upon those on the Moon, those that are added upon the Moon, those organs which we today, after they have been transformed a third time through the impregnation of the astral, through the impregnation of the physical body by the astral body, which we designate as the nerve organs. Okay? Simply stated, start again. Saturn, sense organs, Anlage. Moon, glandular organs, Anlage. No, sorry, see, I'm getting bloody confused here. Let's start again. Saturn, sense organs, the germinal seed of the sense organs upon Saturn, the germinal seed of the glandular organs upon Sun, the germinal seed of the nerve organs upon the Moon, And finally, upon the earth, we have our pleasant present blood system. That is the expression of the ego. Just as the nervous system is the expression of the astral body, the glandular system is the expression of the ether body, and the sense system is the physical expression of the physical body itself. We have then, in our lectures, seen that actually, in our earth evolution, the blood system for the first time made its appearance. Today, we look upon the physical body and we ask ourselves, why does the blood flow in the present form in the paths of the blood? What is it that this blood expresses? And we say, this blood is the expression of the ego. With that, we want at the same time to keep in mind a possible understanding. That, namely, man today actually misunderstands the present human physical body. This present physical human body is, so to say, only one form which the physical human body can occupy. On the moon, it was present. The form of the physical body was present on the moon. The form of the physical body was present upon the sun. The form of the physical body was present upon Saturn, but always present in a different way. On the moon, there existed, for example, not at all that nature kingdom which we today call the mineral kingdom of the earth. And upon the sun, there didn't exist any plant kingdom in our present sense. And upon the Saturn, there still didn't exist any animal kingdom in our sense. But on Saturn, purely the human being in his first physical germinal seed. If we contemplate that, then we must make it clear to ourselves that the present human body actually is not only physical body, but it is a mineralized physical body. That to the laws of the physical world, in which he has a physical body, that to this physical body there have been, he has acquired or permeated through it, the laws and substances of the mineral kingdom which permeate the physical body. So today we have a physical body which is being mineralized, a physical body subject to the mineral laws. Upon the moon, this physical human body did not possess the laws of the mineral kingdom. If one at that time had burned the physical body, you'd never have got a mineral ash, because minerals in the present earthly sense did not yet exist. Thus, think very carefully. To be physical and to be mineral, or the state of being physical and the state of being mineral, are two quite different things. The human physical body is physical because it is dominated by quite the same laws as the stones. The physical human body is at the same time mineral because it has impregnated itself mineral stuff. On the Saturn, there was present the first germ of the physical body. There, at that time on the Saturn, there didn't exist either solid bodies, nor liquid bodies, nor gaseous bodies. Upon Saturn, there existed only warmth, only this condition of warmth. The present physicist does not know this condition of warmth, because he believes that warmth could only exist in connection with gases, or with liquids, or with solids. It cannot have an independent existence of itself. That's what the physicists today believe. But that's a mistake. This physical human body, which man today, which has acquired unto itself the mineral kingdom, was upon the Saturn, this physical human body was on the Saturn, a connection of a putting together of physical laws. We are physical laws. Wir sind physiologisch. What you learn as laws in physics are that we are physical laws which work in lines, which work in forms. In physics, physical laws work in lines and in forms. But externally manifested, this physical human body upon Saturn was only a being which lived in warmth. So we must indeed know how to distinguish between the mineral aspect and that which in the physical, which is actually the physical principle of the human body. These are the physical laws, which dominate the physical body. For example, it belongs to the physical principle that our ear has such a form, that our ear has, in a certain way, our ear is able to take up sound. That is the physical principle. But to the mineral aspect of the ear, there belong that stuff, which is impregnated in this framework of physical laws. So you have physical laws which exist, but these physical laws could exist without a framework or with a framework. As far as our earth condition is concerned, these physical laws exist in a mineral framework. If you don't understand the difference between the mineral laws and the physical body, you better have your head examined. I'm saying this, Rudolf Steiner never said anything like that to you. Okay, let's go back. Rudolf Steiner continues, after we've made clear to ourselves, and particularly have focused our attention on how the sense organs, glands, nerves, and blood are the expression of the fourfold human being, after we've done that, now let's turn ourselves back to the consideration of the sleeping human being. In the bed, with the sleeping human being, there is the physical body and the ether body. Outside, there's the astral body and the ego. Now, however, remember that the astral body is the principle of the nervous system, and the ego is the principle of the blood system. Thus, the astral body, during the night, has left that in the physical body of which it, the astral body, is the cause of. Namely, it's left behind the nervous system. Because only upon the moon did the astral body enmember into the human being. It's only on the moon that the astral body was enmembered into the human being, and only there could the nervous system arise. Thus, you could say that the astral body disdainfully forsakes that which belongs to him, that which the astral body is supposed to look after in the human being, the astral body disdains this nervous system. And likewise, the ego leaves that which it has called into life, namely the blood system. The principal elements, or the principles of the blood system and the nervous system in the sleeping human physical body and the sleeping ether body, these principles, the principles of the blood and the nervous system, namely the ego and the astral, they are outside. There they are, absolutely alone. There, meaning the physical body and the sleeping ether body are alone, absolutely alone. Now, however, never can you get any material element, anything of a material nature, anything of a material nature, anything of a physical nature, could never continue to exist in a form if that particular physical material substance has been called forth by a spiritual principle. It can't exist without this spiritual principle. That's completely impossible. Never could a nervous system continue exist without an astral beingness being present, active inside of it. And never could a blood system exist without an ego being active in it. Thus, in the night, the ego and the astral have disdainfully left behind their nervous system and their blood system, and they have left them behind. And so what happens is that beings, other ego-astral beings of a similar nature to the ego-astral, these now enter, insert themselves into these organisms. Every night, the human organism is occupied by such beings which are able to maintain these. The physical body, an ether body of the human being, which lie in the bed, are simultaneously permeated by these astral and ego beings, which are actually within the physical body. We can call them Eindringlinger, invaders, but that's not correct to call them invaders. You ought to call them rather protective spirits, because they are the maintainers of that which has been disdainfully forsaken by the human ego and astral. Now, it really isn't so bad that man every night leaves his body. I've already told you that the astral body and the ego are continuously active in the night. They continue to recreate out of the physical body, which has been used up during the day. They are actually able to replace in a wide circumference what is being produced as tiredness. And so man in the morning can wake up freshened and recreated, because during his night, his astral body and his ego have removed this tiredness which has befallen him as a result of the impressions of the day life. This is a fact for clairvoyant observation. This perceptible activity of the astral body creating away the tiredness substances during the night. From the external, their work in the ego and astral body upon the physical body and the ether body. Now, man in his present cycle of his development has not advanced so far that he can independently exercise such an activity. He can only exercise such an activity only under the guidance of other higher beings. So we can say that man every night is taken up as in the bosom of higher beings who provide him with the capacity of working in the correct way upon his physical body and his ether body. And these are, at the same time, those beings, and that's why we ought not to call them invaders, but we should call them protectors. At the same time, these beings are those beings who during the night look after his blood and nervous system in the correct way. Now, as there are no abnormalities occurring, this has its correctness in the working together of spiritual beings with the human being during the night. But such irregularities can very well occur. And here we come to a chapter of spiritual science which is extraordinarily important for the practical human soul life, and of which one would be very important that in the widest circles it should not only merely being theoretically known, but in the widest circles should be the basis for certain activities of the human soul life. I've often told you before that certain facts of the soul life can have their correct explanation only if they're considered only in the sense of spiritual science. We all know the deep significance of the expression, considered from the spiritual scientific point of view, the lie is a kind of murder. And I've told you that indeed, in the astral world, a kind of explosion occurs when man expresses a lie. Even in a certain way, you get an explosion when a man thinks a lie. There, in the spiritual world, something happens when man lies, which for the spiritual world has a much more destructive effect than in any kind of bad thing in the physical world. But such things which one can only mention upon a certain stage of spiritual scientific contemplation, and also can be so characterized as is already possible, can win more and more significance and fundament if one advances further in spiritual scientific knowledge. Today, we will learn another effect of lying, telling lies, and verleumden, lies and slanders. Even if, in this connection, lies and slanders are not meant in such horrible way as one ordinarily applies these words in the coarse sense. However, even when man, in that fine sense, when, for example, out of convention or out of habit, you tell also like white lies, you sort of color the truth. Even in that small sense, you have, in the spiritual scientific perception, to deal everywhere with a lie. A white lie is still a lie. Possibly, in many cases, the whole human life, even if it's not really filled with lies proper, are nevertheless permeated with things, manifestations, which can be colored as lies. If you take an axe and hit a man on the head, external materiality can see something happens. But they can't see anything happening when you tell a lie. People don't know, for example, that when you express lies or untruths or slanders, that sort of thing has an actual effect, an actual working upon the human physical body. From the clairvoyant point of view, we can experience the following. If, shall we say, man has told a lie during the day, so the working of this lie remains present in the physical body and can be seen clairvoyantly while the human being sleeps. Let's assume that the human being we're dealing with now is a lying man. He heaps lies upon lies. Then there is much of such working in his physical body. Everything hardens itself in a certain way during the night, and then there occurs something of a very important significance. These insertions, these hardenings in the physical body cannot really, are not very compatible with those beings who, during the night, must take possession of the physical body. Those beings who have to take possession of the physical body, those beings who have replaced our ego and astral, who have forsaken the blood system and the nerve system, these are the beings who take their place. They have difficulties when they meet these hardenings and insertions in the physical body, which are there as a result of the lies that are told during the day. And what happens is that in the course of the life, in such a human being who has been impregnated with lies, parts of those beings we talked about, those guardian beings we talked about, who have entered into the physical body during the night, those parts of those beings are abgeschnort, are separated off. There you have again a separating off, a cutting off process. And this leads to the fact that when the man dies, his physical body does not take only those ways which regularly taken in his normal way with a physical body, but certain beings remain over. Certain beings which, so to say, are produced as a result of the effect of lies and slanderings in the physical body. And such beings who have been cut off in the byways I told you about, they whirl around in our world. They're whirling around. They belong to that class of beings which we have called phantoms. Within you, you have a certain group of elementary beings who are connected with our physical body, who are in the first place invisible for external physical eyes, which increase themselves through lies and slanders. Actually, lies and slanders populate our earth sphere with such phantoms. And so, in this way, we have learned to know a new class of elementary beings. Now, there are present in the soul not only lies and slanders, but other things of the soul life have their working upon the human corporeality. Lies and slanders are precisely those who work upon the physical body, that they are a cause, the cutting off of phantoms, the separation of phantoms. But other things there are which a similar way work upon the ether body. The physical body, you can produce phantoms. Other things are produced by working on the ether body. And about such phenomena of the soul life, you must not be astonished. You must be able to take up these things in equanimity. Such things which have a terrible working upon the ether body are, for example, bad laws or bad social arrangements in any community. Everything which, for example, leads to dissatisfaction, which occurs as bad organizations from human being to human being, that works as a result of the soul mood which it produces in this living together of the human beings, that continues its working right into the ether body. And there, that which collects itself together in the ether body through the working of such soul facts as badly arranged social situations, that also provides separations of beings who spiritually, of these spiritually working in beings, which in any case exist in our environment, in all cases exist in our environment. You call them spectres, inspectors. In German you would say Gespenster, spectres, ghosts. These beings, which in the ether world, which are present in the life world, in the ether world, we see again growing out of the life of the human being. So, many of us can walk around and go around, and you could say that his physical body is interlaced with phantoms, that your ether body is interlaced with spectres or ghosts. And all this sort of spreads itself around and is able to populate the world after death, or the world subsequently after the death of the human being. For some time, these phantoms and spectres populate the world immediately after death, or sometime subsequent to death. So we see how finally the spiritual events of our life continue, how lies, slanders, bad social organizations are able to deposit their creations spiritually here upon our earth sphere. And now you're also able to understand that when in normal human day life, physical body, ether body, astral body, and ego belong together, and so to say the physical body and the ether body is penetrated into itself with other beings, that also the astral body and the ego then cannot be in a normal condition. To be sure, they are, in reference to the physical body and the ether body, in a different situation. Physical body and ether body have, while man sleeps, the same consciousness with plants have. But plants have their ego up above in Devashan. Hence, also, the physical body and the ether body of the sleeping human being must also be looked after by such beings who develop their consciousness from Devashan. Now, indeed, the astral body and the ego of the human being are one world higher. But man also sleeps in a dream way as plants. That plants have only a physical body and ether body, and man in the sleeping condition has still an astral body and ego, that makes no difference in relationship to the plant nature. Indeed, man has been pushed up into the spiritual world, into the astral world, but he is not so far pushed up with his ego that it can justify himself that he sleeps. The consequence is now that also in the sleeping human being, beings must penetrate into the astral body. So we have that also in the astral body of the human being, there are pressing in continuously influences out of the Devashanic world. These influences do not at all have to be abnormal influences. They can be influences which we can say proceed from the human higher ego, because man lives himself gradually up into the Devashanic world, insofar as he continues to proceed more and more on his path of spiritualization. And what is there prepared that is able to influence him today already during the sleep condition? However, that exists not only these normal influences. It would be if only existed human beings acting upon each other who always preserve and value the freedom of the soul. But as far as that is concerned, present-day mankind is very far removed from it. Just think how today's soul, to the greatest portion, wants to overpower other people's souls, how they can't bear if another soul thinks differently and loves differently. You want to convince other people and overpower them and to work upon them. In everything in which you have one soul working upon another, beginning from an unjustified advice which you give other people, you tell other people, give them advice which you're unjustified in giving them advice, telling them how to live their life, right up to those workings which people use to overpower other souls. And it's not working in such a way that one free soul confronts another soul, but in which even the smallest way you try to use the compulsion of trying to convince other people by trying to talk people out of their opinions, in which you're not merely awakening that which sleeps in the other person. All of those things, they work from soul to soul forces which so influence the souls that expresses itself in the night in the astral body. The astral body receives insertions, Einschlüsse, deposits, insertions, and through that beings are separated out of other worlds, which again whirl through our world as elementary beings. And these beings belong to the class of demons. They are present only through the fact that in our world, in the most differentiated way that exists, intolerance of thoughts, overpowering of other people's thoughts. A host of demons in this way enter into our world. So today, we have been able to learn about beings who are there, just as obviously there as other things are there, which you can see with your physical senses, and which the effects of their presence actually very well manifest themselves in human life. For example, mankind would progress quite differently if human beings, through intolerance, would not create these demons which permeate our world and which continually exercise influence upon human beings. These are, at the same time, the spirits of prejudice. So one understands human life in its more finer aspects, that you learn to know these entanglements, these ensnarings that occur in the spiritual world. When you learn, okay, dass man diese Verstrickung zwischen Geisterwelt und Hörensinn, when you begin to learn the interlacings or the interactions of the spiritual world in the higher sense and our human world. All these beings are, as I've told you, there, and they whirl through the world in which we live. Love kind of threw me when he said reactions of the spiritual worlds in a higher sense, because here we're dealing with really a lower sense. But he meant it, he must mean it another way. Continue. Now let's remember on something else which I've already told you. We have already pointed to the fact that in the human being, in the last third of the Atlantean period, in the time before the Atlantean flood, the relationship of the human ether body to the physical body was quite different from what it was in preceding times. Today, we have in the human head the relationship so that the physical portion and the ether portion of the head really in the main coincide. That in ancient Atlantis was different. There we have the ether part of the head projecting out, particularly in the neighborhood of the forehead. Now we have a central point in the ether body of the head and the physical body of the head, which are approximately between the eyebrows. Both these points coincided in the last third of the Atlantean period and today coincide. And through that, it was possible for man to say I to himself and to perceive himself as an independent human being. So the ether body of the head and the physical body of the head have come together. That occurred in order that man could become this sort of sense being which he is within our physical body, so that he can enrich his inner life and through that be able to take up through the impressions of the physical senses, through smell, sight, taste, etc. All that is incorporated into his inner being in order that he can have it and then contribute and apply it to the further development of the whole cosmos. This type of acquisition could not be made in any other way. Hence, we have continuously said that we should not be able to understand spiritual science in an aesthetic way, as a flight out of the physical world. But everything which occurs here is taken with us out of the physical world, and the spiritual world would be lost if these things were not gathered together here in the physical world. Now, man approaches more and more into a new condition. In the post-Atlantean period, we have passed through the different cultural epochs. The ancient Indian, the ancient Persian, which still stood before the time of Zarathustra, then that which we designate as the Babylonian, Assyrian, Chaldean, Egyptian epoch, then the Greco-Latin epoch, and now we stand in the fifth cultural epoch of the post-Atlantean period. Our fifth post-Atlantean period will be succeeded by a sixth, and still more by a seventh cultural epoch. Whereas, in the course of this period, right up to our time, the Gefüge, the frame, the whole web of the ether body and the physical body had more and more solidified itself, became more and more bound together. Now we are striding towards a future, towards a period in which the ether body gradually separates itself and becomes independent. The way backward is made. There exist today human beings who have a much more loosened ether body than others. This loosening of the ether body is only then correct for the human being when he has passed through, when he has passed through the different incarnations, embodiments of those epochs which we have spoken about, during which he has taken so much in himself that his ether body, when it then proceeds to go out again, takes with it the correct fruits out of the physical sense earth world, fruits which are adapted to make the ether body more and more independent, fruits which can be incorporated into the ether body. The more spiritual are the ideas which human beings find within the physical world, the more can he take with him into his ether body. Everything in our present earth existence, which are mainly adapted for utility, which are taken up by the machine, the industrial processes, all these ideas connected with the mechanical industrial aspect, which deal only with the satisfying of our external needs, which serve only our external life, all these are unadapted to be incorporated into the ether body. However, everything which you take up as ideas of the artistic, of the beautiful, of the religious, everything which can be immersed in the sphere of wisdom, art, and religion, everything imparts, all of that gives, imparts to his ether body the capacity and the possibility of being able to be organized in a selbstständig, independent way. Because of all this is being predicted, hence we have often emphasized in this place how the spiritual scientific world conception must send its ideas, its impulses, its workings into the practical life, and that spiritual science is never to be something to be utilized and enjoyed in afternoon teas, something which deals with occupation, dealing with external to life, but it must work itself into our whole cultural life. If one will be able to understand the spiritual scientific thoughts, then you will be able to understand how everything which fills our age must be permeated by spiritual principles. Many people, like Richard Wagner, have upon certain domains had an inkling of the necessity for such a permeation with spiritual principles. You will be able to understand, if in that way, how to build a railway station, that out of it much wisdom can stream out as a temple. if you're only able to really express it in such a form which is adapted to its utility. And in that direction, much has to be done in the realm of architecture. There, impulses must work, and they will work when the spiritual scientific thought life becomes more and more understanding. I very well remember, approximately 25 years ago, with in a rectorate speech, a very significant architect spoke about the style of building, and he expressed the most wonderful sentence when he said, "Styles of architecture are not invented. Styles of architecture grow out of the spiritual life." At the same time, he showed why our age, if it only should be permitted to live up an architectural style which is merely coming from the ancient architectural style, and it's impossible to find for our modern age a new appropriate architectural style, because our age does not possess sufficient inner spiritual life. However, when the world will be able again to produce a spiritual life, then all that sort of thing will be possible. Then we will be able to experience that of all that which we look upon, which surrounds us, that can really send light to the human soul, just as in a city of the Middle Ages, when a person made a lock of a door, when he made that lock of a door, in the external forms there was imprinted something which the human soul could understand. And only then can theosophy be understood, when all around us, in this way, there comes to meet us forms like that which are embodied spirituality. They sort of crystallize out and come to meet us. Then, however, man lives as mankind and lives as a spirit in the spirit. Then, however, there prepares itself in man more and more something which he takes with him when he again moves upwards into the spiritual world, when again his ether body will become independent, self-standing, self-contained. So must the human beings immerse themselves in the spiritual world if evolution is to develop in the appropriate way. Through nothing is our penetration of the world symbolized. Through nothing is the penetration of the world with spirit more symbolized than through the story of the wonders of Pentecost. How in the Pentecost occasion there is prophetically pointed to the fact of the streaming through and the permeation of the world with spiritual life through the descending down of the fire tongues of fire. Everything must again be spiritually enlivened. Also those abstract, conceptual, intellectual relationships which man has today in relationship to the festivals of the year. These must become concrete. They must become living. Let us attempt with such a thought which can proceed out of today's lecture, once for our soul, create such a time which we can be able to call a Pentecost time. Then such a festival, which has been inserted into mankind out of spiritual causes, such a festival of Pentecost will again have a living significance for human being, when his ether body will become ripe and mature for spiritual creation. If, however, the human being does not take up the Pentecost spirit, then the ether body will proceed out of the physical body. And above all, the ether body will not be strong enough to conquer that which previously has been created as spectres, phantoms, and demon worlds. Here ends the lecture. Now, to give you a taste of the next lecture, which will be on the 11th of June, 1908, I'll give you a summary of what the publisher said, of the 11th lecture. The 11th of June, 1908, summary. The connection of the human being with the spiritual worlds through art. Architecture as the union with ether bodies. Music as the connection with astral bodies. In sleep, man comes in connection with beings who provide him with forces for his daily life. In the interaction between the soul inwardness and these spiritual beings, man can grasp the forces of space which create themselves for the physical body, architecture, just as the form forces for the ether body, sculpture, the sentient soul, painting. The sphere harmonies configure themselves for the intellectual soul to music. Words of the spiritual world, which the consciousness soul takes up in the night, configure themselves in day consciousness to poetry. Richard Wagner and his relationship to art, the attempt of union of Shakespeare and Beethoven, a view to future periods in which everything on the external environment, such as, for example, railway stations, will be a reflection for the spiritual being. And he ends this series of 11 lectures by saying the task of spiritual science in human development. If you want to know what I'm talking about in this summary, go to the next lecture. End tape.